Well, our next talk is from Dr. Tarul Pandyadhar from the Ambikar Temple at Jagat, a biographical sketch. Is the lighting into your satisfaction? Sure.
Professor Gombrich, I begin straight away, and I'm focusing on one single temple, the Ambika Temple at Jagat in Rajasthan, attributed to the third quarter of the 10th century AD, which is the time period of Guhila Allatta, son of Guhila Bhadrikatta the second. Perhaps, and definitely in my opinion, one of the best preserved temples in the Mewar region of this period. It has, very briefly, structurally, the main temple, the Moola Prasada, connecting with a closed hall or a Guramanda, and an open front porch or a Mukha Chatushki. The entire temple is done in stone, including the roof structures, which was not so much the norm if we look at the some of the very important complexes like the Saas Bahu at Nagada of the same time period. Some special features accorded to this temple. Like this lustral chamber or the Snapana Griha. The only other example of the 10th century that comes to my mind is the one near Thaan in Saurashtra, the Trinetreshwar temple near Thaan. And fronting this whole temple complex is the Asthana Mandapa, sort of, we assume, an audience hall facing the temple complex, and within the courtyard walls of which some of the southern parts are original, the others are reconstructed. The architectonics of this temple have been very well examined by Professor Dhaki in the encyclopedia, and he places it at the transition period between the Mahagurjar and the Marugurjar styles of architecture. Adam Hardy, in a recent article, has recently referred to this temple and placed it at the period of transition from the monospired Latina to the multispired Shekhari temples in his analysis of the dance of the temple, if I may say so. The special attention that is lavished upon this temple is also met with a very elaborate sculptural embellishment and makes it a very interesting case study for understanding the life of a temple in this region and period. Moving to the early history of worship at the center, the first reference to this temple is made in an inscription of 961 AD, which records the obeisance to Sri Amba Devi by Valluka Sutta Samvapura on the fifth day of the dark half of Vaishakh in Samvat 1017. Importantly, it mentions Punaha Sanskar at this site of the well, step well, lake, garden, and buildings for the fruition of his good deeds. Now, who Samvapura is not clearly stated, but the next line says Labhate Moolikam Phalam, and Moolikam has been interpreted by the epigraphists and the Sanskrit scholars as probably referring to an ascetic devotee. What what his social status was as an ascetic devotee is not known to us. Now, archaeological evidence, but going back to the previous one, the most important here is the mention of Punaha Sanskaram Kartaro. And if we assume that there is some kind of a restoration that has happened here, then stylistic evidence of the temple as it exists today, including all the other adjunct structures, the Snapanagraha, the Asthana Mandap, and the main temple, does not suggest any earlier period in the parts of the temple that exist as they are today. So a total reconstruction rather than a partial renovation seems to be the most likely case. Now, archaeological evidence from the site reveals Matrika images of the 6th century AD. These have been studied for their particularly by Shastok and then later by Shivaji Panikkar, and placed along with the Thanesa Shamlaji group of matrikas, one identifiable with the Vajra as Aindri, and the other has been identified as Brahmani. Unidentified matrika image also, and also the lower portion of a Durga Mahishasuramardini image has been found from the site. So we have evidence of some kind of worship. These have been relocated since to the museums in Udaipur. Also found from here, and earlier to the date of the temple, found in the Gurupandap of the temple, are images of goddesses with Parikar frames. And attributed to the period just before the Guhilas of Medipat, 8th or 9th century AD. What their presence within the Guru Mandap, how they reached the Guru Mandap is not known. Coming to the continuity and the nature of worship at the site, the temple bears 10 inscriptions spanning an approximate period of 8 centuries, from 961 to 1738 AD, and recording worship to the goddess in this temple. If we add to this the earlier archaeological evidence found from the site and consider the fact that the temple is in worship at present, we have intermittent records of a little over 14 centuries of worship of the female principle at this site. Apart from the main inscription on which they base the foundation date of the temple, we have 3 other inscriptions that record royal endowments and gifts and worship to Goddess Ambika. In particular, they mention Maharaja Samant Singh and Maharaja Sihardeva, and also Maharaja Vijay Simha, the first one, belonging to the branch of the Guhilas of Medapata, who then later, soon after the date of the inscription, that is 1172, moved to the Vagar or Dungarpur territory. And the other two, dated 1221 and 1250, are from the royal family belonging then to Dungarpur and not Mewar. Other than these, there are half a dozen inscriptional notices going right up to the end of the 18th century, recording the rite of successful pilgrimage or safalayatra on the pillars and lintels, which clearly indicate continuity. But for a period of about 400 years, from 1250 to 1668, the temple appears, if we go by the inscriptional records, to have received no significant grants, and the history of the temple remains unrevealed. The period, incidentally, coincides. 1250 is the last inscription before the 400-year gap, and that was the reign of Guhila Jaitra Simha, after whom we have the invasions. The Muslim invasions, and also as I will show, the cult icon was damaged and replaced several times. Whether all this political instability or damage to the cult icon or a lack of funds to the temple may have interrupted worship is only in the realm of speculation. The temple remains in worship at present. The principal image of the Devi presently placed in the sanctum is not of the same date as the temple's construction and consecration, but is a more recent image installed on the earlier pedestal and placed in front of the original image frame. In fact, the principal image has been replaced at least twice. The one in worship now is very recent and was placed in the sanctum after the reported theft. And this is in news that I happened to just chance in an article by Deborah Stein, which I found posted on the AAS South Asia Session website. In 2000, this was replaced. Other modes of worship also seem to prevail alongside. According to the local people, sacrifices of blood are still made just outside the temple precincts by some votaries. The original cult icon of the temple has been identified as that as being that of Ambika in her Kshemankari, a very benevolent form of Durga, Ambika Kshemankari, on the basis of the original pedestal with the two lions facing outwards. We have many contemporaneous images of Kshemankari from the region, Unvas, and several other sites which show similar iconography of Kshemankari, because the limbs here are completely damaged. But based on the on the pedestal, on the images, on the Parikar frame, and on the size, proportion, and material of this damaged image found by Dhaki in the Gurubanda, the identification was given. This was considered as the most plausible image in the sanctum, which is propped by several other facts. The importance given to Kshemankari on other parts of the temple, most particularly on the central Rathika niche of the eastern face of the Mukha Chatushki. The front porch has right at the center an image of Kshemankari. Also on the central image on the lintel of the Garbhagriha door frame, these are the two most important positions that indicate the nature of the deity consecrated in the temple. So the Lalata Bimba of the Garbhagriha door and the first prominent image on the superstructure Rathika of the Mukha Chatushki, both are of Ambika Kshemankari. We also have another very beautiful image of a seated Kshemankari on the southern Pitha Khattaka, the sockle niche of the closed hall on the external wall of the temple. The image that replaced that proposed most plausible image or cult icon of Ambika Kshemankari was that of Durga Mahishasuramardini of medieval workmanship, placed on the earlier Parikara frame within the Garbhagriha of the temple. But this is how R.C. Agrawala records it, and the photo archives of the American Institute also record it. But puzzlingly, we also have photographs which do not show the icon. And in 1966, the pedestal was found empty. In November 1966, but this is recorded in 64 with the icon. Then again, the stolen icon in 2000 was a replacement of the Durga Mahishasuramardini icon. So that again is an unsolved riddle. To look at the iconography of the main images and the cult affiliations, the organization of images, there are five very prominent Durga Mahishasura Mardini images on the external walls of the temple. Only the corner offsets of the sanctum have prominently placed male divinities. It's a female privilege on this temple completely. The Dikpala images find position. Otherwise, you have on the central offsets of the Garbhagriha, the Bhadras of the Garbhagriha, Durga Mahishasura Mardini, and also two very prominently but asymmetrically placed images of Durga Mahishasura Mardini on the closed hall. The recesses or the Salilantaras have Devanganas and Vyalas, and the Pratirathas or the intermediate offsets also have Devangana and Apsara figures. That is the logic of the organization of the main images around the temple. This is the main one on the western or the rear side of the sanctum, the back wall, and clearly identifiable are the ghanta, the chapa, the keshagra, the tuft of the hair of the demon being held, the khadga or the sword, the bana, arrow, chakra, and one damaged hand, which has been identified but as Pasha and as Sarpa. Difficult to say, but in the other images you find on this temple, it is the Sarpa that we find more often. This one, on the southern central offset of the sanctum's exterior, the next one, on the northern one, is the most difficult to photograph because of the lustral chamber, and I do not have a photograph of the same. Two prominent images of Mahishasura Mardini on the closed hall, exterior of the closed hall. The attributes, I have compared the attributes with the ones mentioned in the Aparajita Pritcha, the Rupa Mandana, the Western Indian text belonging to a period slightly later than the period of this temple. There is, within acceptable range of text image deviations, a correspondence. However, most of the texts mention Katyayani and Mahishasura Mardini to be ten-armed. None here are. We have some very interesting text image deviations later, and it appears to me that obviously none of these texts to which we have recourse today were the ones that were followed in deciding the iconographic scheme of this temple. The most striking one is placed facing east on the northeastern corner of the closed hall, and most of the attributes here, the khadga, bana, vajra, ghanta, chapa, sarpa, are identified very clearly. There is no problem in the identification of this image. Now, at the level of the socle, we have niches with goddesses whose iconographic traits pose the greatest problem. You have gada, chakra, akshamala, shankha, with a kirita mukuta, which tempts us to clearly identify her as Vaishnavi. But nowhere in any of the texts, nor in any of the contemporaneous representations, do we find Vaishnavi anywhere seated on a shava. And what the sculptor had in mind, what local version was followed, whether she is Vaishnavi at all, is in question. And it is not a single aberration, because next you have what we would identify as Brahmani seated on a lion at the Pitha level, and then the Gudamandap has Simhavahini, and Kshemankari, which I had mentioned earlier. This is at the level of the Sokal. I have already discussed the importance given to the benevolent form of Kshemankari, that is the central niche of the front porch at the superstructure level. And this tallies with Durga Mahalakshmi, one of the Navadurgas of the Aparajita Pritcha. Inside in the Antaral, Sondarajan has often has reiterated in his article that that this had no, absolutely no tantric element, that it had no aggressive forms of the goddess. But there are several. There is Chandika, Chamunda, Yogeshwari, and in the inner niches of the Antarala, we have goddesses with the Khatvanga, the Munda, and seated on corpses inside, just before entering into the Garbhagriha. The Lalata Bimba of the sanctum with Kshemankari, and below is Veena, what has undergone several stages of changes in identification. First identified as a woman, then as Veenadhar Shiva, and then the question is whether he is Veerabhadra, because Veerabhadra and Saptamatrika iconography is also is seen on the Asthana Mandapa door frame. Now whether he is Veerabhadra with the Saptamatrikas, as the Aparajita Pritcha says, but Veerabhadra is not only supposed to be with the Veena, but also dancing. And Ganesha and Bhairava are to be shown next to him. Varahi here is shown with a fish in hand, which again suggests some possible tantric connotations. I will quickly go through the main points that I'd like to highlight in this paper. The temple was undoubtedly well endowed at the time of its reconstruction in 961 AD. Special attention was lavished upon it. It was completed entirely in stone. It had a special lustral chamber shrine, indicating the importance of ritual at the site, more embellished than most surviving temples of the region, included the rare presence of an audience hall also. The temple replaced an earlier shrine, plausibly also dedicated to goddess worship, when the Guhilas of Medhapata had established themselves as rulers of the region around Ahar. The identity of Sambhapura remains unclear, but there is no doubt that he was a Mulika. No name of a royal or a noble appears in the temple inscription. There are earlier instances of some inscriptional references to Guhila rulers or nobles or their family members making endowments to the services of a deity. We also have references from the time of Bhartripatta and stray references from the time of his son and successor Allata, in whose reign this temple was built, particularly in the region of Aghat, which was the capital. Inscriptions of the Jagat temple of the period from the late 12th to the mid 13th century record royal patronage from and worship by the Guhilas of Mewar, as well as the parallel branch of the Guhilas of Wagada or Dungarpur. The picture that emerges from these references is that the period between the mid 10th and the early 11th century must have been the time when patronage to temple reconstruction was first extended, and subsequent periods of stability and prosperity for the Guhila branches registered further endowments to the temple. Yet, as the history of the temple and the continuity of worship at the site indicate, this relationship of temple building and royal patronage also ties up very intensely with the role of the community and the perception of the sacredness of the site of the temple. Political turbulence, as well as the damage and theft of the cult icons during the medieval and more recent periods, appear to have disturbed worship at the site. However, worship here was repeatedly attempted to be rejuvenated, and the wide prevalence of Devi worship in early medieval Rajasthan relates well with the sacredness of this site in the perception of the local community. The iconographic details reveal that Devi worship at the center blended Puranic and Tantric rituals, perhaps pronounced in some local texts to which we have no recourse. It is difficult to accept Soundararajan's view that the nature of worship was devoid of any Tantric or orgiastic elements. Within the accepted range of text image deviations, the iconographic details are borne out by the Aparajita Pritcha, Vishnu Dharmottara Puran, and the Rupa Mandal, but certain peculiarities such as Vaishnavi on a Preta mount and Brahmani on a lion mount are inexplicable. No names of artists are available, though Sirkar has interpreted Rachu as the name of one of the Sutradhars, but that is in the 12th century. Just 2 minutes, I'm through. In the northern Indian context, during the early medieval period, inscriptional evidence indicates a close association between rulers and ascetics. B.D. Chattopadhyay and Michael Willis have both worked on this. An increasing direct patronage to temples by local rulers and nobles from the post-Pratihara period, the period heralded by temples such as the one at Jagat. At the same time, grants given by persons without titles and increasing community participation in making endowments towards temples are also revealed. There is also evidence to show sectarian appropriations prior to the Islamic period, and these have been linked to shifts in dynastic rule by scholars such as Packard and Thurton. I'm referring here to the works of B.D. Chattopadhyay, Michael Willis, and Packard and Thurton. In the case of the temple under consideration, intermittent patronage by ruling dynasties and persons of substantial economic means, the popularity of the cult of Devi worship at Jagat, and community perception of the site as sacred to the female principle appears to have played an important role in maintaining the continuity of worship. This is the picture that emerges from the archaeological, stylistic, epigraphical, iconographical, and to the extent available, textual evidence. Perhaps more may be known to us about the site and the temple when the accumulated debris and the foundation remains of some of the structures in the courtyard of the temple are cleared and analyzed. One note of acknowledgement to my student Preeti, some of whose photographs I've used here, and also to the American Institute of Indian Studies for some of their photographs.
I think we just have time for a question. Yes, John.
This is actually more of a comment, but you started by referring to the inscription which talk about the Puna Sanskara of the temple. And this is where ethnography can be very useful. In contemporary usage throughout Western India, the term is used Jirnodar, the fixing up of an old temple. Now, a Jirnodar can refer to everything from hiring a guy for 1,000 rupees to re-spray paint the outside of the temple, you put up an inscription, and I, the great so-and-so, did the Jirnodar of this temple, to leveling the thing down to the ground and building an entire new structure. So that's where inscriptional and textual reference might not refer, give us a clue what actually happened there.
But the only thing that came to my mind was that the temple as it exists today is completely, it cannot be before the time period of the inscription. Mm-hmm. And so when they say Punah Sanskaram Kartaro Labhate Mulikam Phalam, it could be only a complete reconstruction and not a partial renovation is how it would have to be interpreted. Thank you.
One more? Yes?
You referred in the last part to this whole relationship between rulers and the temple as it has been proposed. Mm-hmm. But in the inscriptions, is the female principal or is the Devi then mentioned? Because a lot of the dynasties, do they refer to these?
Yeah, in four of the inscriptions, Amba Devi is clearly mentioned. The gifting of a Suvarna Danda by Sihadeva to the worship of Amba Devi. Or of a kalasha, of a golden kalasha, for the worship of by a royal. Another interesting thing that I was thinking of, but of course I do not know the view, as only I'm talking about this temple, is that there are inscriptions in Sanskrit and in the local, both in the Nagari script. The ones that have the names of the kings and the rulers, in this case, happen to be in Sanskrit. And the others happen to be in the local. I mean, it could just be a coincidence.
Well, thank you very much. After food for the mind comes food for the body. Try to be back punctually, so that we start punctually in 1.5 hours' time at 1:30. You won't have far to go to find.
Just for the two housekeeping issues, one is that this room will be locked to the lunch, so you can leave things here. But if you want anything you need access to,
yes.
And anyone who has to give a PowerPoint presentation, please give it to Lal, the man in the white shirt.